Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Redevelopment of hundreds of acres of North St. Louis has been a discussion topic for more than a decade, ever since developer Paul McKee began acquiring property to fulfill his vision for that area. That vision includes improving infrastructure, building homes, and developing commercial properties. In the process, he is projecting creation of thousands of jobs. The area in question is bounded pretty much by Natural Bridge to the north, Highway 40 on the south, Grand Avenue on the west, and Tucker on the east. He's put his own money where his mouth is, a reported $60 million and what could be a multi-billion dollar project. It has not been an easy decade. At times he has been regarded with some suspicion, criticized by some neighborhood leaders, and taken to court. But the courts and legislators have reacted positively. The project is now very much a go. Paul McKee and his wife Midge join me in studio to talk about the project and the next steps. Midge and Paul, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, let's start as where are we right now, Paul McKee, in this overall project?
Well, that's right now, and we want to make sure everyone understands all of the legal issues have been settled as of April of 2013. We had the last ruling of the Supreme Court, which gave us a 6-0, gave the city and Northside Regeneration a 6-0 positive vote that the project and the TIF was valid and to proceed. From April of last year till November 29th of 2013, we had to go back through the redevelopment agreement and fix all the dates because of the 4-year delay. And had to go back through the TIF commission to start up the entire TIF. All of that took all summer and all fall. And literally day one of the Northside Regeneration Project is November 29th of 2013.
It was the TIF that was primarily the problem, the court issue.
There were two court cases. One was against the state of Missouri, saying that the distress area land assemblage tax credit was unconstitutional. That was won by the Attorney General in the summer of 2012. The second case was of the validity of the TIF, and that suit was against the City of St. Louis and Northside Regeneration. That's the one that got settled in the Supreme Court the spring of 2013.
You're looking about $390 million is the figure I see in TIF breaks.
That's correct. We spent over 2 years with Cole Engineering and other consultants evaluating the infrastructure needs on the north side, and they're very, very significant. They're over $1.2 billion. We knew we couldn't afford that. The city couldn't afford that. So we went back and essentially said that with the redevelopment that we believe we can do on the north side, that the city and Northside Regeneration could afford a $390 million TIF. We then took off the interest cost of the financing of a TIF and essentially gave to the engineers a fixed amount of money and said, now you got to go through and prioritize because we can't fix everything. You got to prioritize what's really important to be fixed, and that's how we arrived at the 390.
And there's some state help as well, 40-some-odd million dollars. Is that correct?
Yeah, not in the TIF. Yeah. No, the state help has been in what's called the Distressed Area Land Assemblage Tax Credit.
Okay.
That was passed back in 2007. And it provided for a tax credit for all purchases, interest carry and maintenance of all properties for 5 years from the date of purchase. It was a $95 million program with a 6-year sunset, and we were able, because of the delay, we were not able to get everything purchased that needed to be purchased, but we were able to get approved for $45 million worth of Missouri state income tax credits. And then those are roughly worth $40 million when you sell them into the market.
Well, I hate to say this, but I imagine a lot of what you've just said has flown right over the heads of most people who
do
not understand this kind of finance. Of course, there have certainly been critics. But do one thing for me, if you would, Paul McKee, and that is as much as TIFs are spoken about, and as much has been written about TIFs and any number of projects in there, most people don't get it. When we say $390 million in TIFs from the city of St. Louis, people think the city's out $390 million. They're giving it away.
And we put it into our pockets. And why are, you know, what's going on here? And Don, that has been my question to Paul all the time. So when we do our presentation, there is a wonderful slide in there that explains a TIF. And once people see it, they go, aha. Well, so I will let Paul explain it, but I could myself. I do understand it.
Well, just chime in with anything you've got to say. Let me just say that this is radio, so that slide is not going to work very well.
Exactly. No. Right. Let me try to be graphic. The best way is to picture in your mind what the base taxes are
currently
the day the TIF is approved. So there are four elements, four phases of the TIF, A, B, C, D. Phases A and B were authorized in November or December of 2009. Phases C and D were authorized in November of 2013. The city then, the day that those were authorized, goes in and says, this is the amount of tax we're collecting today in these districts. Then through ordinance and through TIF, we're able to capture whatever increment. That's why it's called tax increment financing. We're able to capture an increment for whatever we produce. So as we develop new projects, we then can create an increment, and we're allowed to capture the part of what's called the pilots and eats, and I'm not going to get that sophisticated. But anyway, we're allowed to capture a percentage of the new income for a 23-year period. That income stream then is used to finance infrastructure that is permitted by law, all controlled by law. The hardest thing for people to understand is it has to be forward funded in the infrastructure work done first before the tax stream comes in. And that's the most difficult thing for people to understand.
And ultimately, the city benefits financially how?
At the end of the 23-year period, all of the infrastructure that was installed and paid for is owned by the city. It's either going to be owned by the city or MSD or the community at large.
And the tax base in the entire area is
increased,
higher, and so tax revenue to the city is going to be higher.
Absolutely.
Midge, did he get that right?
He did. He did get it right. You know, he keeps talking about that increment, and people think that's what we have in our pockets. Yeah. We have to put the money out in order for that to become a part of our project.
Right.
Is that figure right, $60 million of your own money to acquire property at this point?
Yeah, yes. The best way to think about it is we actually have a little bit more than $105 million total all in, Midge and I. And then we were allocated $45 million in tax credits, which are really worth, when you sell them in the market, $40 million. So 40 from 105 is $65 million is where we are today. That's absolutely correct.
Okay. Where we are today is what? When do we start seeing shovels turning dirt?
Everybody's question.
Right. The best way to analyze that is phase one of the TIF is really, really significant. And the one thing that we've learned is we have to create beauty and work on the infrastructure. What actually came out of somebody's mouth in a focus group was beauty draws and fear withdraws. Beauty draws and fear withdraws. So the idea is we're going to immediately start working on beautifying Jefferson and Parnell from Del Mar to Natural Bridge, Cass Avenue from Highway 70 all the way to Grand Avenue, and then redo the streets that sort of got chopped up with the landing of the new bridge at Tucker and Cass, and redo that streetscape. The first phase of the TIF that we'll be working on is millions of dollars. Now, what I've been working on ever since November 29th when it's authorized is the financing of that first phase of the TIF. And we hope to have that financing done and in place by July, August of this year. Then that will permit us to start the engineering, and you'll actually see road work and that type of thing beginning before the end of this year, hopefully late fall.
So in other words, you have to find somebody that will guarantee the TIF, that gives you the money to spend, who gets the money back when the TIF is indeed enacted and the money starts coming back.
And how is that going?
It's going good.
Wow.
It's going very good. It's been difficult because no one's put something together like this before in an urban core. And we've worked very, very hard to get at this part. But to put together something of this magnitude takes time to put financing together. And particularly the economy's not back where it should be yet. Sure. So it's still some work to go in convincing people of what we're doing.
Midge, I'm told that your role in all of this, to a very large degree, and there are several roles from what I understand, but to a very large degree is with meeting with community groups and kind of mollifying those people who have concerns from the earliest days of this project. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. The story goes that when Paul started, he had this grand plan, and some lady called him from the community, and he answered his own phone, and she was shocked that he answered the phone. And she said, well, I'd like to meet with you. And he said, great. She said, I'd like to bring some of my neighbors and friends. We want to find out what you're trying to do. So he put the meeting together, and as he was going to walk out of the house that night, I said to him, you know, I have this sense that if I don't go along, I might never see you. So I started going to the meetings with Paul, and that first community meeting was, how many have we done now, 150?
Over 155, 57.
Yeah, to people
like
in the community we go meet, and I've enjoyed it. There are nine, as I say, there are 9,000-plus people that live in that area right now, and we don't want any of them to leave. They need to understand they're welcome to stay if that's their choice, and the idea is that they are the fabric of the community, and how can you create community without some fabric being there from the community that is currently there? So, yes, I've met some lovely people. I think everybody in that Northside area is praying diligently for Paul and I, and we've told them that this is a journey. It's just a journey.
But it wasn't an easy journey from the beginning. A number of those people in the community were concerned about secret purchasing of the properties was one of the things that kept coming up. They were concerned that some of their historic architecture was going to be bulldozed out of existence.
Yeah. Eminent domain.
Eminent domain, a huge issue in this part of the community. Do you think that you've overcome that now? I mean, are you finding this kind of opposition in the community meetings you're still holding?
Not really. The question kind of is when. Mm-hmm. When are you going to get started? And I think that by doing the community meetings, not just in the community, we've had them in our office downtown, and people walk in and they're not so sure what we're doing. And by the time we finish explaining what's going on, they want to know how they can help. So I think there's been a buy-in on a part of a lot of the people that live up there, and they're just waiting to see when we're going to get started and what that's going to mean to their lives.
Well, we're talking 9,000 people, 1,500 acres is the approximate size of the real estate we're talking about. That, by the way, is a little bit bigger than Forest Park, if people want to get some sense of the size of this project. I have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Midge and Paul McKee. We're talking about the Northside Regeneration Project, of which he is the principal part. They are the principal parts, I should say. And they hope to get started early this summer on making some things happen in this area of North St. Louis. We'll come back, continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to get in on it, please do so at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. And if you'd like to send us a tweet, we'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back with Paul and Midge McKee in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Midge and Paul McKee. We're talking about the Northside Regeneration Project, which has been talked about so much over the last 11 years. Paul, I'll turn right back to you because I understand you want to elaborate on something that Midge had just said.
Yeah, when you ask the question, Don, how are we in the community today, it's completely different than it has been once. Once we exposed ourselves and once we let people get to know us and we've met them in their place. But the second thing is we don't see objection in the community. It's usually people from outside the community that are not sure what's going on. In the community, we made ourselves very accessible to folks in either in ward meetings or town hall meetings or around a dining room table or in church basements. We've done a ton of that. And then a ton of people have come into what we call our war room. We have an office in an old warehouse on the north side. When they come in and understand it, sometimes people come in really reticent because they're not sure what we're about. But by the time we leave or they leave, it's completely different. So one of our most difficult things has been to communicate where we are. That's why we're here in trying to take every asset that we can to get our message out. The other thing that I think is real important about getting our message out, as Midge and I spoke in Foshan about 3 months ago. number of people there. And a young African-American gentleman came up to us afterwards and said, why aren't you on Facebook and Twitter? I said, man, I'm an older fella, and it's I have a hard time even answering my emails. And he said, well, you need to be there. I said, well, you show us how to be there. So he came back to us and has been meeting with Midge and I and has put a team of people together to be able to get the message out better, which we've not done a real good job of. But we're getting out there a lot better than we were. So get the facts out there. Once people see that, it's a whole different thing.
I've seen it described somewhere as a charm offensive. Would you put in those terms?
I would say facts, not charm, because this – I think the one thing that really surprises people is they think we have a set plan of what this is going to be and what it's going to look like in its conclusion. We like to say it's a living organism, and it's almost like raising kids. And that's not a good analogy, but it's the best that I can come up with, that what your child's going to be at 2 years old when he's an adult, what he's going to be when he's 15 and an adult is completely different. So your image – so as we gather more facts, as the marketplace is starting to discover us, we're getting input that's causing us to mold. So in Midge, you see the puzzle. The audience can't see it, but Midge has a puzzle piece on her collar that's a great story that sort of helps us tell people how we want to hear from them.
Yes. The idea is that the puzzle, the whole North Side would be considered a puzzle. And that it takes more than Paul and I to put the pieces in there, that everybody carries a piece. Some people come to deliver maybe just a small little piece, but some people might do a whole three or four puzzle pieces together. And the idea is we ask the community, what is your puzzle piece? What have you got to contribute? Because this is not a done plan. This is a living organism. It's in process.
That's why it's called a vision as opposed to a plan. I think that's something you've made clear, Paul, throughout.
That's correct.
Let me get to some of the things that you might consider disagreeable about this whole thing, and that is you've been criticized by a number of quarters throughout this process. People don't seem to trust you. They seem to think, as Midge has indicated, that you're up to something that no one has quite figured out, but that you're getting ready to really capitalize on this whole thing.
If that's the case, 11 years ago, we've been at this 11 years, and if that's the case, we wouldn't still be here. We would have gone off and left this project a long time ago, cut our losses, and said it wasn't worth doing. But I think there's a lot of reasons for that, and I think you got to segregate people in the community and people outside the community. Within the community, it had to be facts-based. So the people had to meet us, understand us. We're white people coming into a 95-98% African-American community. So there's bound to be doubts and mistrust. So Martin Luther King had a great phrase that if black people, white people could have dinner together, there wouldn't be racism in this world. Well, we began to have dinner together and to meet with people. Now, once that happens, and I believe 98% of that is behind us, and the people know how to come and get answers. And we know how to, where to go to ask questions. Outside the community, I have to be cautious with my statement here. A lot of people would just soon see it stay the way it is. That's not acceptable to us. We both grew up north. We live here. We've lived here our whole lives. Mm-hmm. Generations of our family have lived here. All of our kids live here. All of our grandkids live here. We want this city to thrive. And we actually believe that if St. Louis is going to be great again, it takes jobs and job creation. And the only way I know how to do that is with land. And the only land that's available is on the north side.
Well, another thing that you hear and you read is people saying that Paul McKee has bought his way to this particular position you're in now, getting ready to start. Generous donations to politicians, and that this has been your route to get to where you are right now.
We get asked that all the time. In any donation we make is public, obviously. We're very politically active because we believe in good political leadership. We believe in good business leadership. So you will find us contributing on both sides of the aisle. You will not find anything inappropriate or out of line. But you bet your life, we're active politically. Politics matters.
Midge, I'll put this to you, because as a loyal wife and a partner in this venture, how do you feel when you hear the kinds of questions people like me ask and the kinds of things that people are saying that you read about in the paper and hear about on the radio and television?
At first, I was sort of stunned, and then I realized that we have this tendency today in this world to think that we can speak whatever we want to speak and that our words don't define us. I think our words do define us. And at first I was really, obviously I was like, wow. But it occurred to both of us, I think, that we had a little PR work to do. And we've been working very hard at doing that in terms of the people that, as I said, the people we meet in the community are amazing. I think that what people don't know, they ought to find out about. And Paul has been very open about, if you want to ask me some questions, call me and ask me. There isn't anybody we've turned down meeting with. We meet with everybody, even the detractors. And we can't change people's minds. But I want people to know that this, as I said earlier, is a journey. And I think over time, it's evolved to be a faith journey for the two of us.
Well, I think the other thing, Don, that Midge points out very well is change is hard.
Yeah.
Change is hard, and I think leadership is hard, and we see ourselves as leaders. It's impossible for something like this to happen alone. It takes an entire community, and if you've seen our sustainability wheel, there's six or seven real important items. Mm-hmm. We have groups of people like on education and jobs and energy that have been meeting for years trying to formulate how this should come together. So we need leaders to step up. And if you're going to get into this leadership world, you better get used to taking some shots. I think that's sort of the way our world is today, unfortunately, with the Twitter and Facebook and everything. Anybody can take a shot today, whether he knows anything or not.
Was there any point during this last 11 years in which you did want to just fold up the tent and say, you know, take your loss?
Absolutely. And we have a couple of very close friends, African-American friends in the community, that when we're in the valley, we go visit them. And they have been incredible to us. And prayers have been said.
They're prayer partners.
We've been prayed over in the black community. And this, we don't want to make this sound goofy, because it's not. But when we've sat with these people, they give us courage and encouragement and to get up and go fight for another day. But we're in a different position today. We literally have job people wanting to bring jobs to the north side and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So everything you've asked about is sort of the past. We're on the other side of the mountain today, and we can see the valley below that looks pretty good.
I have a number of emails and telephone calls I want to get to, as you might expect.
Good.
There are people who want to get in on this conversation. Matt writes, any specific plans for the downtown west portion of the North Side Tip Zone?
Oh, absolutely. If you've seen any of our public information, we've been working very closely with the city and MoDOT, where the 22nd Street comes in right next to Union Station. And we've always had in our plan an entire new entrance from the south at 22nd Street, a new interchange there. And downtown west is absolutely part of it. And they will be pleased to know that we have some very interesting tenants that are very anxious to be there, which we're delighted about. So we have a whole new entrance coming from the south at 22nd Street, whole new entrance coming from the east with the new Stan Musial Veterans Bridge right at Tucker and Cass. So we have two brand new entrances delivering people to the north side.
Who are some of those tenants?
Oh, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. You want to shoot us in the foot?
Right. Without specific names, can you give us some indication of the kinds of tenants there? Are we talking high tech? Are we talking factories, warehouses? What are we talking about?
All the above. Yeah, all the above. Very, very high tech companies, a couple of them. Light industrial has been shocking to us.
Amazing.
The people that realize that there's still a really good job base want to bring that. So we're seeing quite a bit of that. Retail's probably the slowest, because we don't have enough residential, enough homes up there yet. They say rooftops. But out of all of that, it's the office and the light industrials, how I'd position that, are the more like, I mean, we've got significant millions of dollars of projects in the work and pricing and that type of thing.
And I would also like to say that the people that surround us down in the area, we have a lot of them that we've done business with before and are friends with. So there's a lot of, like, we butt up to Union Station. So I know Paul's been talking to Bob O'Loughlin about that and connecting, what is that, Clark Street all the way back down to the Cardinals, you know, with that whole new Cardinal mm-hmm. Village and everything. Yeah. That whole area has sort of been ignored, but wouldn't that be wonderful if it connected all the way up to 22nd Street? The other thing is Great Rivers Greenway is going to connect their greenway across through the north part of the city.
And onto the new railroad trestle.
Onto the railroad trestle and across over to Katy Trail.
Are you still forecasting 22,000 jobs for this area and 45,000 construction jobs getting the whole thing going?
Yes, sir. In fact, out of the proposals that we have in hand, assuming we'd be successful in all of them, it's over 10,000 jobs included in these proposals.
All right. Well, and obstacles that remain. Financing.
Always. And yes. It's a journey. Mitch said it earlier. I wouldn't call them obstacles. There, anytime you're chasing big companies or medium companies, you got to be prepared to deal with what they need to come. And that's what we do every day.
And the one thing I would like people to know is our city can sometimes be a bit bifurcated. And the thing that's been so amazing to me about the whole process is all of the public companies, MSD, I'm going to miss somebody, the highway department.
The city of St. Louis.
Ameren, the city of St. Louis.
Laclede.
All are just working really hard to make this happen because they know the value of it. And we've not had that for a while.
Yeah, that's true. Let's get some more public input here for our radio program. This is from Zach. He is with MORE, the organization with which you are familiar, I'm sure.
Yes.
I think that one of the main issues that Northside St. Louis has been systematically ignored by the city. Now, 10 years ago, a white guy who lives outside of the community comes in and gets the resources that have been denied to so many for so long. It's not Paul's fault, but he is benefiting from years of systematic under-resourcing to the north. How does he address this issue with people?
Well, first of all, I think his premise is unfounded. We didn't get unprecedented benefits from the city. We had to invest the $105 million. Then we have been authorized for a $390 million TIF. The city has not given us a dime. So that's a mischaracterization of what we actually have to do. We actually have to create the business that delivers the TIF income to be able to retire the debt for the new infrastructure that goes in there. So that's a total mischaracterization of how the process really works. And any American could do it. Zach could come down there and buy ground just like we did. There's no law preventing anybody from doing that.
Right. Well, he's sent us a second email, as it turns out. Ask Paul and Midge about the fact that TIF does divert money away from other publicly funded projects. Mainly, I'm referring to city schools slighted by the forgiveness on property tax within the TIF zone.
That's totally incorrect. TIF tax increment financing, it's new taxes. That we're creating. It has nothing to do with existing taxes. We have a very, very good working relationship with the St. Louis Public School System, and we have guaranteed them in writing that their income will not go down from the level the day the TIF was approved. And Superintendent Calvin Adams knows that and has been a supporter of what we're doing.
Let's take a phone call now from Rick, who is calling from Benton Park. He raises an issue, I believe, that has also come up in the not-too-distant past. Go ahead, Rick. You're on the air.
Yes, Paul. My concern is the loss of our historic treasures due to negligence with the purchase of them by your organization, such as the Clement House. This is a fabric of our community that we're all concerned about, and that, with the lack of attention, my concern is that you're going to try to create a Chesterfield Valley in the city. And being from the outside of our community, I don't know if you understand how this really is a breakdown in our historic heritage.
Sorry about that.
I appreciate your call, but it's a mischaracterization totally. We we would be fools not to embrace our heritage. In fact, that's what brings Midge and I down here today. There's seven different nationalities that have entered St. Louis through the north side. In the German Settlement House, the Irish Settlement House, the Polish Settlement House, the African-American museums down here, the Underground Railroad, there's many things. The Irish folks came in this way.
The French were there too.
And the what we've done is we've come to an agreement with the city which buildings are savable and which buildings are historic. And we wish there were more because there's tax benefits for restoring historic buildings. But you also have to have a use. He specifically refers to the Clemens House. The Clemens House was purchased by Midge and I solely for one reason, which was to save it.
Yes.
There as a heritage. There's nothing around it that supports anything else we're doing other than to make sure we save it. We've spent over $1.4 million, $1.5 million trying to stabilize it and weatherproof it. Because they were stealing some of the products off the front of it, we took the entire cast iron front of it off, and I've got it stored in a warehouse. And the lawsuits hit, and really we've been sitting with our hands in our pockets for 4 years because of the lawsuit. We now are working very close with a non-for-profit to do something really, really exciting with the Clemens House. And again, I don't— until they're ready to publicly disclose it, I do not want to say what it is, but it will be an incredible asset for Clemens and an incredible asset for the community. We then end up working with the DNR and the Parks Department, Historic Commission in St. Louis to make sure what we're doing is compatible with all that.
Do you feel, Paul, that during the course of this journey that you've been on for the last 11 years, that you might have handled it differently in terms of public relations? Because clearly there are still people who have concerns.
No, there's always in my business, whether you're in Wing Haven or you're in North Park or you're in Southern Illinois, you're always going to have people that are worried about change, Don. So that's not unusual if you follow zoning commissions or whatever. So that's never going to go away, in my opinion. So you in my business, you learn to live with it.
Well, and that's part of the American process
that's
to be able to
object.
That's
the way the process works. And you got to get out in front. You got to expose yourself. Now, should we have done something sooner? I don't think so. I really regret how it came out in the newspaper without us knowing it was coming out. But when people like us buy land, we've done it this way forever. You don't walk into an area and say, hey, I'm here to buy your land. You know, how much do you want for it? I mean, that's not how it works. So we did that privately for 4 years. And then once it was public, we've made ourselves totally accessible and everybody knows what we're doing. Now, the one thing I will admit is that during the four-year delay of the lawsuit, we couldn't do anything else. So it caused Midge and I to go have these 155, 157 meetings in the community, which is we've discovered something that's completely different. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be these evangelists for various things that are going to constantly be pushing at different parts of it. We're going to deal with it going forward.
And there are people who think that you're in this for one reason only, and that's to make a pile of money.
Well, tell them to come join us if they believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we'd love to have them.
Tell them to come join us.
All right. We have to take another break. We're talking with Paul and Midge, and we're trying to get to the full discussion of what's going on in the Northside Regeneration Project, which Paul and Midge McKee are so heavily involved in, as you all know by now. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment, but first we have to take this break. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Paul and Midge McKee. We're talking about the Northside Regeneration Project, which will finally see the light of day, I guess we can put it that way, early this summer. But before we continue that conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. An Illinois Supreme Court ruling may mean more than 100 inmates serving life sentences without parole may be released early from prison. Today's ruling applies to inmates who have been imprisoned for murders they committed when they were juveniles. And the University of Missouri is considering changes to its employees' policy for reporting suspected sexual violence amid a flurry of attention to the issue prompted by a former school swimmer's suicide. You can hear more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Paul and Midge McKee. I don't think it's called a partnership, but there is an association that has been developed between your company and it's McCormick, Barron and Salazar. Is that correct?
An association is where both are working in the same community. There's no formal arrangement, mm-hmm. No, Don. What ended up happening is they've done a bunch of the subsidized housing in the communities, mm-hmm. and 98% of the people that live there are living in those kind of units today. And they have been very upfront with asking us, could we figure out how to move roughly the top 25 best renters out of subsidized housing into home ownership? Well, wow, that absolutely we will help with that. So, but it's a loose arrangement. We support. Both of us are trying to do the right thing, and they've been very good. But there's not a formal arrangement.
One of the things that I have read is the fact that you would welcome any kind of an association with an outfit like this because you don't have the expertise in urban housing that this company would.
Well, we're commercial developers. We're not residential developers. So, and McCormick Barron does residential. But we have held a competition. We've got over 3,000 residential units that we have approved in our project, and we held a competition for home builders. 12 different home builders responded that want to come in the city to build, which frankly surprised us. And we were only going to pick 3, but we ended up picking 5. We're working very closely with them. Hopefully we can get sites prepared this fall so they can begin building homes latter part of this year, early next year.
My understanding is that the homes we're talking about will be in the $100,000 to $350,000 range. Is that correct?
That's still being worked out, but that's where we would like them to be. We held some focus groups with the police department, the fire department, and the city also, the school system, St. Louis Public Schools. They all are looking for a new type of housing, so we're delighted to deliver on that, yes.
Is there an audience out there for that, for housing up to $350,000, Midge?
I think so. I think if we can get the TIF going and start improving the streets and the streetscapes and begin to put things in place, one of the things Paul hasn't talked about that came up in one of our focus groups when he asked the neighborhood what they'd like to have, and one lady said cameras for safety. So that's a part of the TIF, too, is to be able to put a camera system in and to tie in with the police, the fire, and everybody else. I mean, it isn't like we've just one day just said, okay, you know. So I think there's a lot of good things going on up there that show that that's what's happening.
Working with the St. Louis Housing Authority?
Not really. That's something that McCormick Barron would do. They manage all subsidized housing, and our interest, Don, is not to create more of that because there's 98% of it is up there already. So our idea is to far sale and really commercially driven is what I would say, housing, not subsidized housing.
Let's go back to the phones and bring in Ed calling from St. Louis Hills. Ed, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I've been listening as I've been waiting on the phone, and I'm sitting in St. Louis Hills in a house worth $300,000, but I grew up down by the brewery in a house that wasn't worth half that. But what I want to say is this program has informed me a lot more than the media has informed me. These seem like two very nice people working a very difficult system in government. And I'm going to say, this has flipped my thinking about these people. Hey, they're trying to do, but they're in a very difficult position. And if I'm about their age, and I admire them for trying. I admire them, and I'll let you go. Bye.
And let me just remind you that St. Louis Public Radio is part of the media.
Yeah, and really, in part of the misinformation I get comes over public radio.
Well, let's not talk about that. I'm sure that's not really the case, but thank you for your call, Ed. Do you want to respond?
That was refreshing to hear. Thank you very much, Ed. You've made my day. I think that people don't understand, and Paul says this quite often, and truthfully, I don't know that you've said it publicly a lot, but We have a system in our city that we have to work within. And we're working really hard to work within that system and still make something really cool happen. And if anybody's ever been involved in any St. Louis politics or what goes on in the city, you know that there are just 1,000 places you've got to go to make things happen and people you have to meet and people you have to talk with. So I appreciate what Ed had to say, because we're trying to work within a community that is large and needs a lot of attention.
What I would say to Ed is him being our age means he's part of the Vietnam era. And what I would say to you, and Midge and I feel deeply, it's our generation's turn.
Yeah.
We cannot leave our city in this part of our city when it's our generation's turn to step up to bat and to make a difference. And I would challenge you, Ed, find your way in. You've got something to contribute. Come help.
Mm-hmm. Well, after Ed's kind words to you, I have an email here that says, ask the McKees to refute the claim that they purposely let buildings decay in the area in which you were purchasing.
Well, I think the best way to answer that is that would be foolishness, because once we let them decay beyond repair, we are not able to use the historic tax credit to refurbish them, which would bring roughly a 45-cent dollar to the table for refurbishing. So you'd be an idiot to do that. So and you have to realize we've got something like 260 structures to wreck, and of those, probably 60% of them are half falling down when we bought them. And all of a sudden, people are paying attention and saying, why'd you let them get this way? Well, they were that way when we bought them, the majority of them. The ones that are worth saving, we've been trying to save.
What about displacement? You talk about a population of 9,000 or so in this area. Are these people going to find themselves out on the street?
Absolutely not. No. We don't want one person to leave the north side. And we've not bought one facility that's had people in it done, not one. So what we have looks a little bit like Swiss cheese. So as we put together sites for new buildings, in new industry to come, there may be a building or a homeowner that's existing. What we will do is offer them to move their home to a different block, pick it up and move it, or buy their home, put them in a new home. But for God's sake, the last thing we want them to do is to leave the neighborhood. And if they say no, we'll figure out how to build around them.
Buy their home and put them in a new home at whose expense?
At our expense.
Totally?
Yes.
Totally. That's different. I'm looking at a brochure that has been provided us here. It says the Northside Regeneration is open for business. We have remarkable incentives. What kind of incentives are we talking about?
Well, the best way to describe that is when you chase jobs like we do, there are economic development incentives that come from the state and from the city. If you were in the county, it would be state, city, or county and city. And these are incredible tools. Everything from the TIF to we don't have a super TIF here, but the state has a right of granting you a super TIF status. We do not have. Historic tax credits are an incentive. The Missouri Quality Jobs has been converted this year to Jobs Now, Missouri Jobs Now. There's brownfield tax. There's all kinds of credit programs and job creation programs within the state. So then when we find an industry that's interested in coming, the most important thing to us is how many jobs. Then we figure out how to, because they all want money to be able to relocate. It costs money to relocate and build new facilities or to renovate. So then we try to find them the means to be able to do that. The one other thing I would say to you that hasn't come up is between the city of St. Louis and us, we've competed for and have won what's called the White House program called Strong Cities, Strong Communities. And we're absolutely delighted. We've been selected as one of 7 cities out of 50 that competed into the program. Mm-hmm. And we should see 2 full-time people in the mayor's office soon. And then they really help us. Mine, M-I-N-E, different federal programs that could come in and help. And we never anticipated that. So this is incredible incentives that we think we can help bring to the table.
Although this might not be the best time to be going to Uncle Sam for dollars.
Well, yeah, but this program is built around all existing programs, Don, nothing new. So the idea
not
is
new money.
Like there's federal brownfield programs for cleaning up and doing a bunch of demolition. But I've never played in that world before, and it's, neither is the city. So the idea is that we're going to have a team of people that are going to help us.
The Pruitt-Igoe site's a great example.
Yeah, it is. They're cleaning up Pruitt-Igoe is a huge example.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's take another phone call. Eric will join us from Clayton. Go ahead, Eric.
Hello, Mr. McKee. I am wondering, in response to your comments about not wanting anyone to leave North St. Louis, do you deny that you've ever evicted anyone from your homes?
Yes.
You do deny that you say you'd never evicted anyone from living in any of your homes?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I must disagree because I know people that have been evicted from homes that you own. And, I mean, they're in the process of being evicted right now. They've been struggling with your company for, you know, at least a year.
I think you're dead wrong.
I'm not. I mean, I know it's a fact. And I know what I really find most appalling about everything that you've been saying on the show today is that you present yourselves as benefactors. And I just want you to know that many of us see you as the capitalist and opportunist that you really are. And that's all. Thank you.
It just can't seem to get past this kind of attitude. I mean, this just persists to this day after 11 years.
Well, there's all kinds of folks that have agendas relative to that, Don. I promise you we have not evicted one. It would be on the front page of the Post-Dispatch, and you'd know it if we did. So that's not our goal. Now, a lot of people have offered buildings to us for sale or say that we're buying them, and then they want to get bad tenants out and that kind of stuff. That happens in the real estate world every day. We have not evicted anyone. We've had a lot of trouble with homeless, mm-hmm. a lot of trouble. And the city has worked with us very closely, and so has St. Patrick, so has Grace Hill, so has what's Carol's firm?
Catholic Charity.
Yeah, a bunch of them have worked with us to try to find homeless real places to be. Because what ends up happening is that we've lost 15 of them to fires, that somebody sets a fire in an old home, that kind of thing. So we have evicted homeless because the city doesn't want them in there any more than we want them in these old buildings. They're not safe.
Evicted from otherwise abandoned buildings?
They try to get in. We have to keep them boarded up, and they'll peel the boards off and climb inside of them. Well, that's the last thing we want. Yeah.
I only have about a minute and a half left. One of the things that I've read about your kind of wish list or dream list or whatever you want to call it is perhaps to build an NFL stadium somewhere in this area. And I'm saying to myself, good Lord, we might not have a football. Might not have a football team a year from now.
Well, I think the best way to answer that is we think the Rams are an incredible asset to our community. We will assist the city and the state in any way possible to help the Rams stay here and expand here. That's significant to us. It's part of our brand as the city of St. Louis. So absolutely we'll help with that any way we can. And so we just reach our hand out and help. But we are not NFL kind of folks, but we're developers.
In the few seconds we have left, what is the biggest myth about this project you would like to dispel?
I think for me the biggest one is that we're going to make millions of dollars and that the only reason we're in here is because of financial concern. But you're looking at us. You know we're not young people. We would not be entering on a journey like this today. That's a 15-year process if that were the case. So I would like people to dispel that. But does it take money to do what we're doing? You bet your life it does. And it takes a public-private partnership of both city and county and state. But the other piece that I would say to you is if you see our logo, there's always two arrows. We call it the IQ and the EQ, the economic value, the social value. And what we say to folks is, if you're coming just to make money, don't waste our time. If you're coming just to do good, don't waste our time. You must have a soul to participate in what we're doing.
We're going to have to leave it there. I'm afraid our time is up. Paul McKee, Midge McKee, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us. We'll be watching
what you do. Obviously, everyone will be.
Join
Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about the St. Louis Symphony Youth Orchestra's concert featuring cellist Grant Rue, the winner of this year's concerto competition. Steve will also take a look at the St. Louis Art Museum's Impressionist France exhibition, and he'll talk with British record producer and engineer Ken Scott about his experiences recording the Beatles, Elton John, Pink Floyd, and others. Monday on St. Louis On the Air, we'll talk about current issues pertaining to the law with a panel of legal experts. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This program is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer with production assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Amanda Huntingfort, and Spencer Reed. Executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.